Hello, and welcome to the Early Career Principles webinar today. This is the last of this academic year's NAESP Quarterly Early Career Principle webinar series. I'm Katie Early, the Manager of Professional Learning Projects at NAESP. We also have NAESP staffer Nikki Sparks providing technical support. Thank you, Nikki. Nikki and I will be monitoring the chat questions, and we will entertain those at the end of the webinar. The NAESP Pre-K through 8 Principals Conference is less than 6 weeks away. Have you registered? We'll be in beautiful Spokane, Washington, and have an outstanding lineup of keynote, concurrent, and breakout speakers. There will also be creative learning formats provided in the exchange by our Center for Innovative Leadership Fellows, Andy Jacks and Hamish Brewer, as well as an innovation rotation session where you can rotate to 3 different speakers utilizing a digital device all in one session. Registration is available on our website, www.naesp.org. Come and join other national leaders who understand your world and expand your leadership and knowledge and networking. Thank you for joining us for the webinar today. We think you will find this well worth your time as you grow in your professional learning. Early career principals often struggle to ensure effective instructional practices are being implemented with time management and leading change. Blend all these responsibilities with working effectively with students and adults, and you have a full-time job. Today we have Bill Jones and Tim Koster sharing sage advice for early career principals. Bill Jones is principal of Corbin Intermediate School in Corbin, Kentucky, and Timothy Koster is principal of Lead Deadwood Elementary School in Deadwood, South Dakota. Both Bill and Tim serve on the NAESP Board of Directors. Thanks, Tim and Bill, for your service and sharing with us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you, Katie. I am Bill Jones, and I am in my 38th year of education, 18 of the last years serving as principal here at Corbin Intermediate School. So I'm very happy to be with you. I'm going to be talking about a couple of different topics today. One is instructional strategies, and one is leading change. Now, as you can imagine, instructional strategies can be a pretty broad topic and one which would probably be a workshop all within itself. But we're going to try to narrow the focus just a little bit and talk about one specific strategy, and that is pushing students to do most of the thinking during the lesson, which has proven to be an effective instructional strategy. There was a recent research project that was done that said that students spend most of their time in school without access to 4 key areas. And these 4 resources are grade appropriate assignments, strong instruction, deep engagement, and teachers who hold high expectations. Now, it was common to find some of these going on in classrooms throughout the nation, but it was rare to find all 4 of those going on at the same time. So we're going to narrow it down, as I said, to just one particular strategy, because even if you're having grade appropriate instruction, which is, you know, grade appropriate assignments, that's the foundation to all these others. The research showed that there was lots of times that students weren't being able to do most of the thinking in the classroom. So, Katie, if you'll go to the next slide. Why is it that students aren't doing most of the thinking? Well, some of the reasons are teachers do most of the talking. Students are asked only simple questions that don't require critical thinking, and students are given the answer before they have enough time to do the work themselves. So what we want to talk about is, what does it look like if students are doing the thinking in the classroom? As you're doing walkthroughs, just a normal everyday walkthrough, and you're in a classroom, what are you seeing that tells you that students are doing the rigorous thinking that's required of the assignments that they're being given? There's 7 strategies that you can look for as you're doing these walkthroughs. Next slide, please. One you can look is the teacher proactively building academic mindsets with the students? In other words, is the teacher building a classroom culture where students feel comfortable making mistakes? Are students free to take risks in that classroom? Is academic progress being celebrated in that classroom? Does the teacher explicitly teach students about growth mindset? And does the teacher provide wise feedback to the students? At the end of this presentation, I'm going to give you a website that you can go to that has lots of resources. You'll be able to watch videos that sees these actually occurring in the classroom. You'll be able to read articles from journals and other resources that are there, as well as the link to the research that I mentioned. So that's one. Is the teacher building mindsets, academic mindsets, with their students? Next slide, please. The second strategy that you want to look for as you're doing your walkthroughs, does the teacher set clear behavioral and academic expectations for student participation and work? In other words, are you seeing routines in the class? Do the students know what to do next? And not just the beginning of the class routines, but routines that occur throughout the lesson, particularly at transition points. Even as simple as, do students know how to turn work in? Has the teacher taught protocols of how the work should be done? Does the teacher use rubrics so that the teacher or the students know what's expected of them for the work? Next slide, please. The third thing that you want to look for is, does the student ask questions and assign tasks that require critical thinking? Do you see students, or excuse me, teachers that are using language that is embedded in the grade level standards? Does the teacher use text-dependent questions that focus on the most important details? That is, if the text is being used. In other words, do the students, if they're reading a text, do they have to go back and look for specific details in the text that they read? Is the teacher immersing students in real-world problem solving? And does the teacher ask more open-ended questions than closed-ended questions? In other words, does the teacher say or ask the students, how did you get that answer? Or what did you mean by that? You will hear phrases such as that as you're doing your walkthrough. Next slide, please. Does the teacher give all students a chance to do the work? So when asking questions to the whole class, ensure that all students are responsible for coming up with the answer before you call on someone to respond. You may see something like whiteboards being used in the class, those small handheld whiteboards that students can answer questions on. Or maybe the teacher will have the students use fingers to say 1, 2, or 3 for A, B, or C. Or maybe there's a Kahoot being used where the students are having to answer the questions. Any number of ways that students, and I mean all students, are being given the chance to do the work and not just the one that the teacher is calling on. Next slide, please. Does the teacher check for understanding frequently and strategically? You can look to see, does the teacher have the pulse of the classroom, so to speak? Do they look for ways that the students are showing that they understand the material? And you can't just use a simple thumbs up or thumbs down unless the teacher is asking for agreement to something that she is or he is asked. But basically, just does the students understand what the teacher is asking of them? And the teacher needs to know whether to proceed with the lesson or not based upon her understanding of if they are with her or not. The next slide, please. Does the teacher hold high expectations for student responses and ask targeted follow-up questions? Does the teacher have exemplar responses that he or she is looking for? Does the teacher ask follow-up questions to elicit complete responses, not just single word answers or simple type answers to the questions? Does the teacher ask probing questions? And maybe most importantly, does the teacher address misconceptions if there are any? These are things that you will look for as you're going through your walkthrough. Now, the last one, if you'll move to the next slide, please. Does the teacher facilitate academic discussion and feedback among students? Does the teacher give students many chances to informally share their thoughts? For example, a think, pair, share, or a turn and talk to your neighbor. Does the teacher teach protocols for students on how to participate in a formal discussion of the materials? And does the teacher give students a chance to discuss and give feedback on each other's work? These are just a few ways that you can look for this instructional strategy is if students are doing most of the thinking in the classrooms. What I would suggest doing is just coming up with your own walkthrough document that would have these things that you are looking for as you go through the classes, and just check them off as you see them happening. Then you can have discussions with the teachers from this document that you produce. Now, I'd like to change gears just a little bit. If you'll go to the next slide, please. Before I do that, though, I forgot the resource I promised you. You can learn more about this at tntp.org. Again, there you will find these strategies along with a lot of other strategies, and you will have resources to go along with those videos of actual classrooms where teachers are teaching these strategies. You'll have articles from magazines such as NASP or ASCD talking about these strategies as well. And there's also a link that you can find there to the research that I mentioned. Now, the next topic I want to discuss is leading change. And I ran across a nice article. It was actually an interview that the author had done with Jim Hackett, who is the chairman of Ford Motor Company. He became the CEO in 2017. This article I was reading was from Fast Company in 2018. So he'd been the CEO about a little over a year when this article was done. Now you may be asking, what does the CEO of Ford Motor Company and a school principal have in common when you're talking about leading change? As Ford Motor Company, you're talking about a multi-billion dollar company who is facing lots of challenges that affects their bottom line. Well, there's actually more than you would think. And as I read the article, I ran across five items that I would like to share with you. Katie, if you'll go to the next slide, please. The first one is have a point of view. Mr. Hackett said that when he first became CEO of Ford Motor Company, he took the first 100 days to talk to all of the stakeholders and the key leaders in the business, and they developed a point of view for the company. Another word might be developing the vision of the company. They came up with a slogan that they use called Smart Vehicles in a Smart World. It's important for the leader of the company to have a strong point of view and to constantly share that and keep that point of view or that vision out in front of those that are working there. Without the leader sharing his or her point of view, you're just inviting confusion and a lack of direction from your staff. A good leader will constantly be bringing the vision up to the people and holding that as the target that they're shooting for, and use it as a motivational tool for the teachers to know what they're working for. The second item that I ran across, if you'll go to the next one, Mr. Hackett said you have to learn that you don't have much control over the outside environment. as you can imagine, the automobile industry is facing a flood of things from the outside environment, everything from self-driving cars, clean fuel alternatives, electric cars. They are even discussing what the whole idea of mobility will be in the future and what their role will be in providing that. So not much different than the things that we face as school leaders. Think of all the outside environment things that happens to our schools and being brought into our schools. We're constantly being bombarded with what school is, how we're going to look at facing these challenges in the future. Now, Jim Hackett said that no matter what the future brings, there's still going to be a need for some type of vehicle in the future. Same way with schools. So no matter what challenges that we are facing, there is still going to be a need for education going forward. If you'll go to the next slide, please. The third item from that article that Jim Hackett talked about was to create a family. And he said they were very fortunate in Ford, of course, because the Ford family has been so prominent throughout the history of the organization, from the founder, Henry Ford, in 1903, even down to today. And that having this family feel to the business set the values that the company, because of the long-range look and feel of the family, influence over all those years. Now, in schools, we may not have a single family that we look to for this legacy, but it is so important for you to find ways to create an environment of a family feel in your school. Family gives the feeling that we're all in this together. Family care about each other. Family has a vested interest in the outcome. So you cannot downplay or overstate the importance of creating a family environment in your school, especially when you're trying to lead change. Next slide, please. Another thing that Mr. Hackett talked about was learning from others. You know anything about the automobile industry? Tesla has been kind of pushing all of the other manufacturers in the way of electric vehicles. Electric cars are on everyone's mind. But Mr. Hackett talked about there are other ways that you can design vehicles that doesn't require a gas-fueled engine. And he said that even though Ford is their competition, Tesla is their competition along with these other businesses as well, that you can learn from others because they push you to boundaries that you didn't know that you had. Learning from others, not just in that regard, but even in our individual learning. How many times have we been on Twitter and you see what another school is doing or what another principal is doing? And in our industry of education, sometimes we look at other types of education as the enemy. We talk of charter schools or private schools affecting the public schools, but we need to look at it from a different angle possibly, that what can we learn from them that will push us to be better at what we do? So learning from others is a big factor. And last but not least is to stay optimistic. Mr. Hackett said that staying optimistic is a recipe for success no matter what business you're in. You need to come to work every day with an excitement and a sense of anticipation that we're going to learn something new. Our world is changing in ways that our grandparents never could have even imagined, and schools are at the forefront of these changes. So we want to be optimistic about our future, and if we can't stay optimistic in the midst of all that's going on, who can we look to at our schools to provide that optimism? So that's an important role for us as school leaders. Now, I'd like to leave you with one final thought, and that is Henry Ford, who was the founder of Ford Motor Company, had a saying that he liked to say, and that was that if you ask people what they wanted at that time, this is 1903, he said they would have said, "I want a faster horse." Well, fortunately, he didn't build a faster horse. Ford Motor Company was at the forefront of disruption, even at the beginning of the automobile industry, by creating a new way to provide mobility. We're at the same place in education. If you work in a school, you are right in the middle of disruption. Dave Ramsey likes to say that you are either creating the wave of disruption, or you're riding the wave of disruption, or you're getting crushed by the wave of disruption. So my challenge to you today is to embrace the disruption and have the courage to lead through this change. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much, Bill. I appreciate that. All great words of wisdom. Thank you very much. So my portion of this webinar is to address some mental health issues and how we've handled things in our building and community partnerships in the Lee Deadwood School District. So my name is Timothy Costers. I am the elementary principal for the Lee Deadwood School District, which is a consolidated community, both for Lee and Deadwood. They consolidated their school district in 1972. And so this is a very interesting community where in 2001 our gold mine closed and created some interesting dynamics. And so for our school district, and so we have gone through several changes, and we are at this point, we're about a 54% free and reduced lunch population in our school, just in the elementary school, about 340 kids. And so I'm going to talk about how we handle mental health issues and things like that in our district. And I have been an elementary principal for 15 years, 21 years total in the education setting. I taught second grade and fourth grade before moving into the principalship. But most importantly, I'm a husband of 23 years, and I have a daughter that is 19 and a son that is 12. And so we will go on with the slides. So next slide, please, Katie. All right, so the first thing that we did in the Lee Deadwood School District is identified our opportunity for growth, and we started a conversation. So very fortunate for us in our district. We have a superintendent that is very willing to start conversations that are not necessarily easy all the time, and so we look forward to opportunities to grow. And we felt like we needed to have all of our stakeholders in our community at the table in order to have this conversation be effective for our schools. And so what we started in 2016, Lawrence County Alliance for Children, Youth, and Families, and we invited everybody we could think of, from state attorneys, legislators, and you can see the list of people we invited to the conversation, and we started talking about things that we could do better and the help that we needed to ensure success for our students in Lee Deadwood School District. All right, Katie, next slide. So we started out by identifying the problem. So we felt like it was very important to identify exactly what issues were happening in our schools. We had a conversation with a friend of mine. He's the elementary principal in Sturgis. His name is Nick Gottlieb. And we felt like it was critical for us to identify exactly what's going on in our schools that we need help with. And so we did that. And actually, I'm going to let you read through those things. Your list is probably very, very, very similar. But it was critical because we never seem to talk about the actual things that are going on in our schools. We can't just gripe about things and not have an idea or an outline of what we're trying to accomplish. And we had probably three or four slides like this, and you guys can make up your own, obviously. But if you want to have the conversation and really want to move forward, you got to tell people what you're facing in our schools. And so we felt like that was the way that we did that. So next slide, please. So we are very fortunate in our school district because we've got school counselors in every building, school psychologists. Our school nurse is in our district. Actually, she travel throughout our district. And then we have SROs both in our high school and middle school setting, which is one campus up in Lead. And then we have an SRO for our elementary school in Deadwood only as well. I should say, I guess I'm going to stop at this point and tell you that if you have any questions, please feel free to type any questions into the chat bar. This is my first webinar, so I'll try to answer any questions as they come up. This does get a little easier if people ask questions, I guess, and I can answer those things, but otherwise I'll just go through the presentation. So if you have questions, write them in the chat bar, and I'll try to do my best to answer those. it is important to know that we started about 2 or 3 years ago, more than that, 5 years ago probably, meeting weekly with this group of people and myself to talk about not only academic issues that are going on in our district, but also trauma-related mental health issues that are happening, because it was becoming apparent or very clear that we needed to do something different for a very small number of our kids. And so we actually meet every Wednesday morning at 8:30 and talk about anything the teachers will bring up with this group of people throughout the week, and then we can make sure that we're all on the same page. We get together and we try to identify what each one of us can do to meet the needs of an individual student as we move forward with in our building. All right, Katie, next slide, please. We also have several community resources that are absolutely outstanding. Lots of people in this community do a great job for our kids. And so we wanted to make sure that everybody knew about what those things were. And at those meetings that we have on a weekly basis, we make sure that if there's a parent that needs contacted with one of these resources, we make sure they get in contact with that. Or if students need to have contact with these people, we make sure that we have people on our team on those Wednesday meetings to make sure that people are connected with community resources as we move through our processes. But we have lots of great people in our school district. And so next slide, please. So there are several gaps when you talk about mental health in schools and in communities, basically. Lots of times when you're talking about DSS, because teachers will often say, why isn't DSS stepping in to help this situation or accommodate whatever kids need? But in reality, a lot of our kids don't fall into a specific abuse or neglect situation, or they're too young to receive court services things. So our students that are from 5 to 9 years old are creating, or we're creating, a pretty overwhelming situation for our students and our staff in the elementary school. And we're not talking about a large number of kids. So we're talking typically less than 1%. In our building at this time, we probably had, you know, 3 kids that were just outliers that we needed help with. But we were finding that we were spending all of our time on that very small number of kids. And so this is the kind of stuff that we went through, the process we went through to try to make sure that those needs were met for our kids. And we made it very clear to the people in the room when we met with our Lawrence County group that we can't do this ourselves. I mean, if we're expecting schools to meet the needs of the mental health issues in our schools and trauma issues, we can't do that. We're not trained for that. We needed help with that. And so that's where the conversation kind of got geared towards. All right, next slide, please, Katie. So during the conversation, there were lots of topics that came up. We talked about legislation in South Dakota, juvenile justice, parental awareness, mental health, substance abuse, and interagency communication. Obviously, when you talk about mental health, the communication between the school and the health professionals are somewhat murky, and so that creates issues. But I was placed as the chair of the mental health committee as we went through the process of how we're going to meet our needs in our schools. And so there were little subcommittees of all these topics that talked and brought ideas to the table. This is obviously a mental health conversation, so this is what we did in our school district as we move forward. All right, next slide, please, Katie. So we really identified 2 major barriers for parents as we went through this process of mental health and addressing it in schools. As you all know, when you try to have a conversation with a parent about some issues that are taking place in either a kindergartner or first grade students' lives, lots of things happen where you will have a conversation and finally get to a point where everybody kind of agrees, but then what's next? That process, if the parents are very willing and able and can go through the mental health and health processes, can take a minimum of 4 months by the time you get an appointment, the evaluation, the paperwork, any medical stuff that needs to happen. If everything goes well, it can take probably 4 months. In many cases, as I told you, we are 54% free and reduced lunch students here. Sometimes that can take up to about a 10-month process, because once you identify it, you have the conversation with parents. If they don't go into the, they don't contact medical professionals right away, that could take, that sets that time back. By the time you get any evaluation and a need is met, it could take up to 10 months. And add to that in our area, so in our Lee Deadwood School District, we are a minimum of 30 minutes away from one of our providers in Spearfish, the other one's in Rapid City, which is about 45 minutes away. So there's only, but, and there's actually only one specialized pediatric psychiatrist in our area. And then you add to that, if the student receives Title 19, it's even more difficult to find those providers because there are less than 5 providers in our area. And in most cases, it'll take minimum of 3 months by the time you have a parent call to make an appointment until they actually get into the appointment and then go through the process in there. Those services are definitely overwhelmed. The other one is transportation. Lots of our parents don't have the ability to get down to an appointment in Spearfish or Sturgis or Spearfish or Rapid City because of lack of transportation. They don't have cars that are available. And so that becomes an obvious problem for our parents. So we tried to address those two barriers with our mental health process in our building. Next slide, please, Katie. Backing up just a little bit, our school district entered into a partnership with Behavior Management Systems in 2013, and it's called Family Pathways in our schools. And it's basically, we allowed all of our students or adolescents that met the severely or emotionally disturbed criteria, which are not set by the schools at all, that is a completely BMS diagnosed issue. If they qualify for that, they receive services in our building. So we basically just gave BMS a space in our building as much time as they needed to meet with kids to go through some counseling type issues. Family Pathways is a counseling service. And so what they will do is they will meet with our students after we've gone through the referral process with our support team meetings on Wednesday morning. We call them student support team meetings. We go through that referral process. We identify students. We refer them to BMS. If BMS finds them to meet the criteria, those students are seen in our building. So instead of having to go to receive services outside our district, a minimum of a half a day or a full day of travel and everything being gone from our building, they receive those services here in our building for free to the district. And that Family Pathways is a fee service that doesn't cost the district anything. It's all taken care of with BMS. We don't do anything except provide office and internet, copier use, parking, stuff like that. All right, next slide, please. And then in the spring of 2018, our partnership with BMS was so successful in the Family Pathways counseling arena, I guess. We really thought that after going through this Lawrence County conversation, we needed to add a telemedicine aspect of that. Just it seemed like the next best step for our students, and making sure that all of their needs were met was going to be a major obstacle because of obviously the barriers of time and transportation. So telemedicine is basically a provider meeting with our students in our school once a month or however often it takes. So BMS handles all the release information. We just make the referral based on whatever needs we see for our students. Our school nurse's responsibility is to take weight and blood pressure of each student. We, again, are not charged for any of these services. We are responsible for providing a computer and technical support, basically, so they can have an office where it's secure and they can have a conversation with a provider that's in Rapid City, typically is the way that works. And our students meet with the BMS providers once a month or as needed based on their recommendation. Our school nurse also does some of the scheduling, so she will assist in that. What's really amazing to me is that our parents will lots of times ask that our school nurse sits in on that conversation so that they can offer the perspective of what's going on at the school level with the parents in the room with the provider on the other side of the, on the other line as well. Next slide, please, Katie. Students that qualify for free and reduced lunch automatically qualify for BMS services. If you don't qualify, there's a sliding scale rate that does that for the telemedicine processes. We make referrals, obviously, with parent communication and moving through that process as well. Both of the our behavior management system contacted both the Lead and Deadwood pharmacies. So when they, if there is a script needed for a student to meet their mental health needs, they will just e-script over our pharmacies. Parents just go pick that up, or we'll do whatever it takes to make that, make sure that need is met as best we possibly can for any of our students. So the reality is, by eliminating the need for transportation and time issues for our parents, our students are able to walk out of a math or language arts class, go down, receive a mental health evaluation or needs as much, whatever is needed to be taken care of by the parent and the provider. They're able to walk down out of class for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and then return to class right after they're done with their appointment. The other thing is that when parents don't have to go and take a half day off work, it's obviously much more beneficial for parents as well. And so everybody feels like this is a huge win-win thing in our district to take care of our mental health needs of our students as best we possibly can. And I think that's the end of my slides, Katie. So next slide, please. All right, can you, go ahead.
At this time, that concludes the slides that we have available. I would encourage anyone that has questions to submit those using the chat box or the question and answer box so that we can address those during our remaining time. We'd like to thank both Tim and Bill. Like I said, we'll entertain any lingering questions that you may have during this time, so we'll keep an eye out for those. And, you know, your question will be read aloud to the group and responded to. So I'm not seeing any come in.
I'm not seeing any either.
Well, we would like to thank Tim and Bill for their time, and thanks to everyone who's participated today. If you would like to revisit today's presentation, it will be accessible in both video and podcast formats on the NAESP website. You will need to use your NAESP member login to access those videos, either the video or the podcast. And as always, if NAESP can ever assist you in your journey, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. And again, oh, it looks like we do have one question. It says, Timothy, I would like to have something like this for our kiddos. Can we? Yeah. Oh, I can pick your brain. Okay.
So my contact information was on one of the previous slides, so I would assume that they're going to be able to get a link, correct? But yes. So the other thing too, Tony, would be that if you would like to contact me, I'm at the Lee Deadwood School District in Deadwood, South Dakota. Yes, it is like the HBO series Deadwood, correct? That is where I'm at, yes. So if you'd like to contact me, you can always contact me. But I think my information is going to be on these slides. It's on the slides. I know it is. But absolutely anytime. Please connect with me. Give me a call. Shoot me an email. It's probably better if you give me a call. Actually, my cell phone number is 605-641-4137. I answer it all the time. I'd love to be able to visit with you about this. I have given this speech to our state legislators, and I tried to get that whole thing down to 5 minutes for them. So it's obviously a lot of information, but please feel free to contact me anytime. Absolutely willing to talk about it.
Hey, are there any other lingering questions from the audience? I'm not seeing any. So again, we would just like to give one additional reminder about the NAESP conference in Spokane. Here's the link to some conference information. If you haven't registered, be sure to do so and plan to join us there. And again, we would like to thank Tim and Bill for their time today and all of you who were on the line. And it seems like that will conclude today's Early Career Principles webinar.
Thank you very much, and I hope to see you all in Spokane.